Hey, you're listening to The Morning Show here on Raglan Community Radio. That was James with Sometimes, and I want to welcome Paul Trenwith to the call. Morning, Paul.
Yeah, good morning, Aaron. Thanks for having me on the show.
So before we get started, I just want to say that this is a slightly odd interview for me because Paul was my boss about 25 years ago working in an architecture firm.
Aaron was a fine young draftsman, but I'm delighted that he turned into a radio announcer.
Yeah, I didn't imagine in 25 years' time we'd be doing this. And I have to admit, at the time, I was pretty young. I think I was 25 when I started working for you guys, and I didn't really understand who you were or what you'd done. I knew you would come and play banjo at staff parties and things like that, which probably confused me more than anything, I think. I was a little bit ignorant of the world and didn't appreciate things, but I'm much older now. And
lots of things change as you get older and you get an appreciation for what's gone before. Can you turn me up just a little bit, or turn your voice up a little bit in my phone, please, Aaron? Thanks.
Okay, we'll try that. How's that?
That's good. That's better.
Yeah, yet. Okay, good. Yeah, so the Hamilton County Bluegrass Band, you also do the Back Porch Bluegrass Show, which we play at 9 or 9.30 here on Monday nights.
Yes.
But the last ever gig, I heard you saying the other night, the last ever gig for the Hamilton County Bluegrass Band this weekend.
We decided to make this one the last. We were invited to be one of the bands at the Cambridge Autumn Festival, and that was a good opportunity for us. For the last few years, we've done about one gig a year, and that's getting a little bit harder to pull out the music the way we like to play it, doing one gig a year. COVID wiped out several opportunities to play, and nothing never really recovered after that. So we looked at this gig and thought, look, if we keep up our one gig a year rate, the next one will be next year. My fingers can move pretty rapidly on banjo, but at 77 years old, my fingers are slowing down, and the connection between my brain and my fingers is definitely getting a bit slower. Alan's the guitarist for the band. His fingers are giving him a rough time, and he can't chord a guitar anymore, and so that's very frustrating for him. And he plays mandolin in the band as a rhythm instrument, and it's just harder getting together. The rest of the band is, there's a couple of my family in it, and some good friends. I'll name them if we have time. But it's just getting harder and harder to put it all together. So we thought we'd make this concert our last one, and I think it's going to be a good concert.
For sure, but I also think it's sold out, hasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, so we'll do the interview anyway, though, because it's a significant event, I think.
Oh, it's just good. To talk about it, actually. We've had a fine time as a band, you know, from our very early days way back in the 1960s on New Zealand television and playing concerts around New Zealand, and then we played in Australia for a couple of years, and then there was a bit of a gap while my wife and I went off to Australia and played for another few years. Then we came back and had a gospel music band for several years, which Alan always participated in our recordings. We've always kept in touch with various band members. And then in 1992, I think it was, we had a Hamilton County 25-year reunion and decided it was really good fun. And so we put together a local version of the band that had my oldest son, Jeremy, playing bass in it. And it was Colleen and me and David Calder and Jeremy and Alan Rhodes. And we played for several years like that. And then we got some tours. We toured with Gray Bartlett's Highway of Legends, two tours in the early 2000s. And we've toured with the Top Twins with one of their tours, with Dame Malvina Major. We've had all sorts of opportunities to play and have thoroughly enjoyed them, but the playing opportunities sort of got less and less, and we really like doing concerts rather than just gigs here and there. We've never been a gigging band, really. So concerts are fairly hard work. You know, you're putting on a couple of hours of music. So that's another reason for deciding that we'll stop doing that.
And I remember one day when I was working for you, I had to call you about something. You had a week off. I called you, and you were in a studio, and I could hear the music in the background when I was talking to you about a relocatable classroom or something exciting like that. But which is mostly all we ever talked about, I think. You must have been recording music as the band at that point. That would have been 97, 98, somewhere around there.
Yes. 97, we were doing an album in Rotorua. We recorded at some studios in Rotorua. And yes, we've done lots of recording over the years, 15 or 16 albums. And in those days, you produced albums. That seems to have changed a little bit these days. And but we enjoyed producing albums and enjoyed putting the music down. We've always been moderately creative, writing some of our own songs and own tunes and things like that. Music will still be very much part of our lives, and everyone in the band will keep on playing music at whatever level they choose to play at. And it's not like we're giving up music, it's just that we're giving up our once-a-year gigs as a Hamilton County.
Yes, fair enough. Let's go back then to the TV show. How did it happen that you ended up on a TV show?
In about 1967, we were starting to play some gigs, particularly in the folk clubs or the folk scene around Auckland. And we were pretty, I suppose, exciting to watch. We had banjo, we had fiddle, we had mandolin, we had guitar and a double bass. And there was a producer from New Zealand Television who wanted to put on a country music show, but he wanted it to be a very different sort of country music show. And he heard about us, he came to watch us at a gig, and he booked us to be the backing band on the feature band. We did all the music on his forthcoming TV show. And this show also featured as the MC and leader of the show, one Tex Morton, who was very famous way back in pre-World War II days. He was the man really that got country music going in New Zealand and Australia, and he had a huge contribution to make. So he was back as the father of the whole thing, and we played this bright, happy music, and they got guests from everywhere, and the show was a really good show, very up-to-date technology, excellent camera work, great sound, great lighting, everything. It was a very watchable show, and lots of people who watched it said, well, I don't like country music, but I really like the country touch.
Right.
And so it was a very well presented show. So that because New Zealand only had one TV channel at the time,
I was going to ask about that.
If you had a TV set and wanted to watch it at night, once a week we came on, so we sort of got fairly well known.
Yes, yeah, well, you must have been. I mean, did you have that thing where you recognised everywhere you went? Or, I mean, how what level was it at?
Yes, it was Colleen particularly as fiddle player, because every shot of the fiddle sort of managed to get her face in it, whereas Alan too, as a lead singer, he was very well recognised. Not me so much, because the banjo used to zoom in on my fingers going flat out. So unless I waved my hands at everyone, no one knew who I was, so that was pretty good really.
So was Colleen getting stopped in the street and things like that? Or was the New Zealand public very they weren't shy? Okay.
She hated that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she would have happily played her music behind a curtain. She really enjoyed playing the music, but she was definitely not one for publicity.
So I guess that turned you from a band that was, I don't know, experimenting and having a bit of fun trying things into something a bit more serious and albums to be sold to the world and things like that?
Yes, yeah, very much that. We fell into a rather strange place in New Zealand music scene. Like, in those days, they had the Loxine Gold Disc Award, which was for all the pop bands of the era. Mm. And we sort of fitted into that vaguely. And I remember going to a couple of those award nights, and here we were, this sort of vaguely folky bluegrass band, and all these rock bands were there, and somehow we fitted into that scene. So we occupied a rather strange place in the New Zealand public's eye. We just thought we were playing a music that people knew about, and bluegrass music was a nice form of music to play. But that's more a USA thing than a New Zealand thing. We occupied a strange space in New Zealand public's music perception.
Yeah, well, for me, who was born a few years after that started, you know, the legend is that rock and roll took over the world in the mid-50s, or started to, and did it in the 60s. And I was also slightly perplexed about how a bluegrass band in New Zealand was on the TV and selling albums and things like that.
Very strange, very weird. But New Zealand has always had its own music scene, and we just fitted into it strangely at that point in time. And then in subsequent years, when we came out and did things, people remembered that particularly. They said, "Oh, I used to watch them on TV. Yes, yeah, that'd be a good show. We'll go along to that," you know. And so we managed to keep playing good music. That was really what it's all about. Yeah. The music's always been very bright and happy and quite competent and precise and all that sort of stuff. And that's what we particularly enjoyed in doing the music. And that's what's particularly frustrating as you get a little bit older if you're not able to play as well. The public, in most cases, don't mind. But we mind. It's a bit like, you know, most cricketers and rugby players know when to retire.
Right. Oh, at least you've got a longer career than the average sportsman.
I think so.
Yeah.
To still be playing concerts at this age is pretty amazing, really, I suppose. Yeah.
And I know that you the band went to the US and went into the heart of bluegrass territory, I guess. How did they take to this? Bunch of people with strange accents turning up.
Most American. The American bluegrass musicians were very welcoming and loved the fact that we played bluegrass music down in New Zealand here, and the fact that we could do it very well, and that just amazed them. We were always mindful of the fact that in New Zealand we didn't have a really a bluegrass audience, an audience schooled in bluegrass music.
Yeah.
So we've always had to appeal to the wider musical tastes, and that really helped us in the USA. We were able to put on a very good show, whereas many of the bluegrass bands could just do bluegrass music and be well received for that. But we always put on quite a good and entertaining show, and that did us well in the USA when we played there.
So you were, at that point, this was your career?
Yes. In the very early days of the television show in New Zealand, I was a trainee draftsman with the Ministry of Works. But then when the band got really popular, we passed in and on our jobs and were full-time in New Zealand for 2 years and then full-time in Australia for 2 years. And then I was a draftsman for a year again. Then I was full-time in Australia for 3 years. And then I came back and turned out to be a draftsman again.
and stayed that for quite a while.
Well, yes.
To be fair, you ended up running a business as well, so...
Yes.
A lot happened. I remember you telling me you were Slim Dust. You described yourself as Slim Dusty's right-hand man at one point.
When Colin and I went back to Australia, Slim Dusty hired us as full-time employees, and we played all his music, and we played in his recordings, we toured, and if there was nothing happening musically, I was doing all sorts of things for Slim, and he's sort of painting the bathroom and taking the van down to get us Warren a Fitness and all those sorts of important things.
And just for people who don't know, like my generation probably knows the name Slim Dusty, but doesn't know how much of a big deal he was in Australia or around the place. Like, can you just kind of give us that picture?
When we first met Slim when he toured New Zealand in 1969, and we became good friends with him, and he and his wife Joy, who was his manager and very much an integral part of the whole Slim Dusty deal, they said, if you're ever in Australia, come and see us. So when we got to Australia, we did go and see them, and they had us on tours and things. At that point, I think he had about half a dozen gold records for LPs that sold above a certain number, and I forget what the number was, but he was just really getting beyond the pub with no beer type song and really producing a generic Australian country music that really got to people. And we got to work with Slim when he was really going from strength to strength. He turned out over 100 albums for EMI.
Wow.
So they loved him, as you can imagine.
Yeah, yeah. 100 albums.
It's just huge, his output. And we were delighted to be, I think we were on about 10 or 15 of those albums. And we were delighted to be part of that. When we left to come back to New Zealand, he replaced us with musicians who played banjo and fiddle and acoustic instruments, as well as he always had some electric instruments in his band, and he had a really good mixture of sound. And we went over every few years for a while to play in special concerts with them, and have kept in touch pretty well up till now.
Now I just want to pop back to the US. There's a website, Audio Culture, with lots of information about New Zealand musicians on it, and there's a bunch of photos of you guys from very early. This is quite funny thing from 1968, a video made by New Zealand Film Unit, perhaps, of you guys.
Yes, we
getting
had,
together as a
we
band.
Had friends in the National Film Unit, and they made a great movie of us and how we would get together on weekends and play some music.
But there's also a photo of the band being interviewed on TV in the US with Indiana Secretary of State somehow involved. What on earth was? How did you end up there?
Mike Seeger, who is a member of the famous Seeger family, half-brother to Pete Seeger and things like that, he came to New Zealand in 1968, I think it was, and maybe 68 or 69, and he really was our arranger of our first trip to the USA in 1971, and he organized for us to play at Bill Monroe. He's the man who sort of originated the bluegrass music, and to play on Bill Monroe's festival at a little town called Bean Blossom, Indiana. Bean Blossom is about 50 miles south of Indianapolis, and one of the members of the governor of Indiana, one of the members of his staff, was at the festival and saw us play and thought, oh, you know, this is interesting. A band from New Zealand has come all the way to Indiana to play some bluegrass music for us. So they hosted us for a day. They came down and collected us in a huge limo and went to Indianapolis. It's hard to say that word. Went to Indianapolis, shouted us a flash lunch, and sort of did some filming and showed us around the town a bit, and gave us certificates of governor of India, governor of Indiana.
Wow.
It was funny. So that was a great certificate. That was a great experience. Very hospitable people. Lovely.
That was pretty unexpected too. And I'm guessing when you're there and you're playing, you're meeting a lot of people who are probably musical heroes of yours, or certainly people you respected a lot.
Absolutely, particularly in that 1971 trip. Many of the people that were hugely influential on the band in our early days were still playing the music, and I was able to see my musical heroes like Bill Monroe, Earl Scruggs, the banjo man. He was just amazing. Lester Flatt. We followed the Flatt and Scruggs band for a long time. Just so many people. Ralph Stanley was just amazing, being able to see those people. Ricky Skaggs was a 16-year-old kid playing for Ralph Stanley at the time, and we were able to see him in his very formative years playing music, and he sort of went on to become a big country and bluegrass star. So, yes, we did meet and talked to lots and lots of people, and that was a really cemented my love for the music, really.
Yeah, quite. Yeah, how did, now here's the thing, back when you're young, you're still at school, and you must be picking up the banjo, and I know in New Zealand back then, getting music from overseas, it's not, obviously it's not like it is now with the internet, but it's also not like it is when I was a kid, where there was lots of stuff coming in. How did you even know bluegrass music existed and that you wanted to play it?
That's a good question. The first time we really heard bluegrass music was at the start of the Beverly Hillbillies show, when that theme music played.
Right.
And I was a banjo player, and I used to follow the folk music of the time,
yep,
which is people like the Kingston Trio and the New Christy Minstrels and people like that. And I heard that banjo and said, that's how I want to play. That's what I want to do. And Alan's mother, Alan and I always knocked around together, Alan's mother found out that it was played by the band called Flatt and Scruggs and the Foggy Mountain Boys. And she bought from a world record club a record of theirs. And we put on that record and found out that there was a whole genre of music associated with that style of playing. And so set about trying to find as many records as we could. There were a few available in New Zealand because some companies were importing Elektra records or Folkways records, and we could find some there. But most of it we got from a record outlet that specialised in bluegrass music, and we had to get the money together, send over. They sent out the albums for us. That process took about 2 months. Sometimes the albums arrived warped, and we couldn't play them, and we persisted in trying to play them. Mostly they came out all right. We used to get six at a time, because if you got six, you got you got another one free. And so we bought albums and listened to them very closely, and liked many of the songs and learnt them, and gradually put things together.
So I mentioned earlier about, for someone of my age, there's the mythology about rock and roll taking over in the 50s and 60s, but I think as an important part of that was that there was a folk scene as well, and certainly in America, and obviously in New Zealand as well, from what you're saying. Is that an important part of the context of how you guys developed?
Yes. We did play in most of the folk clubs. We were definitely part of the folk scene, and banjo had always been a part of that scene, as was acoustic guitar and fiddle and mandolin and those sort of acoustic instruments that you can carry around and play anywhere were part of the folk scene. And so we did play at many of the folk clubs. Technically, bluegrass music is probably more part of country music, but it got funny. When we got a little bit more famous through the TV show, many of the folk people thought that we'd sold out and gone commercial and didn't like us so much, and the country people thought we were too folky, and so we didn't get as much out of the folk clubs and the country music clubs as we possibly could have done.
That's, yeah, the politics of it, it always comes into it.
But that's why we became very independent, really, and did our own concerts.
Right, right. Now, because I don't know that much about bluegrass music and that whole thing, I had a and that era, I had a chat with Dave Mabey the other day.
Yes.
And just to get some context, and I wanted to know just because I don't even know. I've seen you play, but I don't really know how good you are. But he was very complimentary about your skills and also about Colleen as well. As a fiddle player, he said you guys were his go-to session musicians when he needed those instruments.
Yes, we did get to do quite a bit of session work in New Zealand. There were a few other people who also did some great session work. Colleen especially was a very good musician, and she actually ended up in East Tennessee at the East Tennessee State University teaching fiddle in the bluegrass course. So they had as their fiddle player someone from New Zealand.
Yeah, because that was and Dave told me about that, because my question was how were you guys respected by the people in the US, and clearly yes.
Yes, very much so. And I just played sort of regular bluegrass banjo it's just a genre of music, really, like Dixieland band or blues or something like that. And the certain requirements, you really need to be able to play fast and not so much furiously, very fleet with your picking lots and lots of notes. And that's one of the integral parts of the music. It's got a driving rhythm with a fairly heavy offbeat in most cases. The instrumental skills on some of the young people these days, particularly in the USA, are absolutely stunning, and they're very good players. Just in recent years, we had a few Kiwigrass festivals where a band from up around the Lee area, the Pippi Pickers, they're great players and they love their bluegrass music. They were also very good organizers and they put on these festivals. And we had guest bands from the USA who were playing. And we've got some young people like the Frangos Rhodes boys who are very good musicians and have adapted well to playing bluegrass music and bluegrass stylings. Much better musicians in many ways than what we were in our early days, but that's always the way the young people pick it up and add a dimension to the music because they have different influences. Yes, all over the world the bluegrass music's played. I got a great friend who's a Frenchman, and in the 1970s he was playing bluegrass music in Paris, and he now lives in New Caledonia and
wow.
Still plays, you know. So Czech Republic has got some wonderful bluegrass bands. They think it's really just part of their folk music, and they play wonderful music and actually make great instruments. Japan's got more bluegrass bands than most of the rest of the world have got.
Now, that is unexpected, although the Japanese do surprise us regularly, so, yeah, maybe.
Yes, yeah, they're wonderful players. So it's just one of those things that you really have to focus to get the licks. I mean, I can play banjo pretty well and well enough for my knees, but I also love playing mandolin, and I'm a terrible mandolin player. I just cannot get the fluency that you need to play good bluegrass mandolin, whereas our mandolin player, Keith McMillan, does have that fluency in playing. I spent three quarters of an hour trying to learn fiddle once and gave it up and said, this is never going to happen.
Well, with Colleen to compare yourself to, it's probably a little unfair.
Yes, it was a bit. You tend to get sort of good on one instrument and okay on the other instruments. And I think that's what I liked about bluegrass music. It was a technical, very technical music, really.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, you're talking about all those different countries where there's bluegrass music playing these days. And I guess now with your show, the Back Porch Bluegrass Show, which is from Free FM, our friends in Hamilton, hosted there, but played here and played in stations in North America as well, I think, isn't it?
Yes. Say that again?
I was just talking about your show, Back Porch Bluegrass.
Yes.
That's played overseas in North America, is it?
Yes, it's played on half a dozen stations in Canada. They've taken up my program. It's played on a couple of stations in the USA, and particularly one called Bluegrass Planet Radio, which features bluegrass music all day long. And
right.
They have shows from various other sources that they include my one from New Zealand. So, yeah, a lot of people log in every week and get the latest show. There's all sorts of ways that you can get it as a podcast and as well as listening on radio. So it's well-received everywhere it's played. I get letters from the UK and letters from Australia. I get letters from the USA. People enjoy the music. And so it's great to be part of a worldwide movement.
Yeah, and it's. I mean, I think the thing I was picking up on was that you knew about bluegrass players in so many different countries. And has this actually, doing the show, has this expanded your view of bluegrass?
Definitely. I'm always amazed at when I find other people who play bluegrass music as they are. But it's an instant form of acceptance, you know, when you find someone else that likes the same thing as you like, you know. And so it's good. The letters that I get from the USA invariably start with something like, "I am amazed that my favourite bluegrass show comes from New Zealand."
Yes, yeah, I believe that easily. That would be a great surprise. Paul, another thing I wanted to ask you about was just the trend with band. You have a band with your sons or family members, even a grandson has played with that, is that right?
Yeah, you're quite correct there. I've got four sons who all play music, and three of them live in Hamilton, which makes it easier. The youngest lives in Wellington, so it's less easy to have him involved, even though he plays music. My second son, Sam, is a great songwriter and guitarist and singer, and he and Tim actually play in a lot of the bands that you see in doing gigging in pubs and things around Hamilton, and they also play at weddings and other various occasions. But we have a band called the Trendwiths, which is Sam and Tim and myself playing banjo, and we play all sorts of things, a lot of Creedence Clearwater Revival stuff that I fit my banjo into. Yep. And as part of that, we have my oldest son, Jeremy, who is involved in so much music, it's ridiculous. His oldest son, Tyler, plays like a busker's percussion set, a kick drum and a hi-hat and some shakers for the Trendwiths. And we have a lot of fun playing that music in different places. We're playing a gig on Sunday morning, this coming Sunday morning, over at Whangamatar as part of the Beach Hop.
So, oh, yes, yep, yep.
So, yes, so the Trendwiths get to play quite a bit, and that's good fun. Jeremy, my oldest son, is a guitarist now in Hamilton County Bluegrass Band. He was originally a bass player for us, and then he played guitar for us as Alan got less able to play guitar. Mm. But Jeremy also is part of the Hamilton Big Band and plays trombone and arranges music. And Victoria, his wife, is the fiddle player. She's a second Mrs. Trendwith to be the fiddle player in the Hamilton County Bluegrass Band.
Oh, wonderful.
And she's the fiddle player for us. She's vice principal at Hamilton Girls High School. So,
how's she fiddle that in?
So fairly busy people.
Yeah.
And that's been one of the other problems with the band. You know, if we said we've got a gig coming up, people will say, "Oh, well, I can't do that. I've got something else on."
That's why
we end up with one gig a year.
Funny, it's that kind of reminds me, I don't know if you saw, but on YouTube a few years ago, Neil Finn had recorded an album live. And he was there with, you know, his sons and nephews and people he'd played music with throughout his life. And I thought, I wonder if Neil knows just how lucky he is to have his family playing with him like that. And I feel like asking you the same question.
Oh, absolute treasure. It is really good. And my grandkids play music. Sam's got four kids and they all play. And Tim's girls are learning to play music. Jeremy's kids play music as well as Tyler did.
Yeah.
We played at Festival One at beginning of this year, and we're fairly regular at Festival One, and because Sam and Tim have been involved in youth music all their lives. And we had Tim's daughter Molly up playing saxophone with us in that when the trend was played. So we had another grandchild. She's nine, and she played saxophone on one of our tunes. But also playing at the festival was Zach's band Albert Street, which is a popular band which has got two of Sam's boys in it. So I went to watch them play. Seeing your grandkids up on stage, They're far out musicians. We could never play like them. They're really great. And so his kids play music, and his youngest is part of a, you know, takes a lead in the school musical. So the kids are all involved in music, and it really is a thrill to be able to play music with them. And yeah, Neil Finn is great. The interesting thing about playing music intergenerationally,
yeah,
that's a good word, isn't it? is that when you can play the music, the age ceases to be important.
Right.
And you know, if some, you see that particularly in the USA bluegrass bands, where there's often a mixture of generations, but not necessarily from the same family. And, you know, if they're looking for a banjo player, and the person who plays banjo happens to be 16, that's fine. And so here's the 16-year-old playing with all these 45-year-olds. But if the banjo player, man or woman, happened to be 60 years old, that's fine too. So you get these really strange age groupings in the bands, if the people can play the music. And it's all about being able to play the music right, you know.
Yeah.
So it's, and the age suddenly doesn't matter.
So it sounds like you're not going to be putting the banjo down anytime soon, even though the Hamilton County Bluegrass Band was doing its last gig this weekend.
Always handy, always there. I've got to try and keep my fingers warmed up for the concert tomorrow. Yes, no, I won't be putting the banjo down or any other instruments down.
That's really funny. That I thought something had gone wrong on my mixing desk here. I could suddenly hear banjo music coming from somewhere. Oh, funny, yeah. Well, look, Paul, it's been really, really awesome to have a chat with you this morning, and I know the tickets have already sold out for the last show, but really nice to chat to you. And we will podcast this interview as you podcast your bluegrass show. So I might send you the link. You've probably heard yourself too many times, but there might be other people who want to hear it.
Oh, I'd be delighted to have the link. Thanks very much for the opportunity, yeah. Aaron. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no, it's been fun. It's been fun. Thanks for your time, Paul, and we'll hopefully we'll see you around the traps. I saw you out here a few weeks ago when one of your sons was playing. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Sam will try and get any gig he can in Raglan because he loves coming out for a surf.
Yeah,
so, if there's an opportunity to come out, I'm sure he'll do it.
Brilliant, yeah. All right, Paul, thanks for your time.